Support for this program is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you.
The Local Thread.
Works, a program brought to you by the Toledo Free Press as part of WGTE's The Local Thread. I'm Erin Holden, editor-in-chief of the Toledo Free Press. Our show explores the working lives of everyday Toledoans, and this episode is focused on what it's like to devote one's life to advocating for animals. First, we'll speak to Laura Zitzelberger, founding director of Nature's Nursery, a nonprofit that focuses on helping the wildlife in our area. Laura, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Thank you for being on the show.
Glad to be here.
Okay, so first, can you give us a rundown of what services Nature's Nursery provides?
There's really two areas that we deal with. We deal with education and we deal with wildlife rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. So we go out and we educate the public about the wildlife that they share their backyards with. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, if we do our job well there, we won't have to do as much of the rehabilitation.
Okay.
And then we take in injured and orphaned wild animals with the intentions of getting them back out into the wild. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we rely on the public to find these animals because they don't come to us on their own. So it really involves, even though we're an animal organization, we're very much a people organization too.
Right. I'm sure you're fielding a lot of calls.
Oh, yes.
Every day. And you co-founded the organization in 1989, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So how did that come about? How did you get involved in this?
Well, I was working at the Toledo Zoo, and one of the employees there had just resigned from the zoo and was, as a hobby, going to start a wildlife rehabilitation center. Mm-hmm. I didn't know her at the time. Her name was Deb Cooper. And when I heard what she was doing, I said, well, I have to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. And so I just called her and I said, are you taking volunteers? Because I would like to help you. And it was just kind of funny because we hit it off right away. We became absolutely the best of friends. And then it was funny because then I started dating my husband, and he hit it off with Deb's husband.
Uh-huh.
And so we ended up just spending all of our time at Nature's Nursery, kind of growing this new organization.
Wow. So it was just the four of you at first.
Yes.
Getting it off the
ground.
There
was a, yeah, there was a small handful of volunteers, but nothing like what it is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what were those beginning days like? I'm trying to think of like how that would happen, like how you would get started.
Yeah, it was very different from now. There weren't a lot of regulations back then. The ODNR would hand out what are called raise and release permits. Mm-hmm. So if somebody found some baby bunnies, they could call the wildlife officer and get a raise and release permit, not knowing anything about how to take care of baby bunnies, and they could raise them and let them go. Well, what was happening, obviously, is a lot of animals weren't making it.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that did were usually too friendly to survive properly out in the wild. So we actually also helped to organize the Ohio Wildlife Rehabilitators Association. And so that is now an organization that helps to regulate and educate people that are wanting to do wildlife rehabilitation in Ohio. So we have a really good working relationship with the ODNR, and then we're also licensed by U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the USDA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. So now you're educating people on how to work with these animals so more people can do what you do.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is we want, you know, we don't, like, Nature's Nursery currently doesn't take in raccoons. We haven't for quite a long time because of some state regulations. But we would love for somebody in the area to specialize in raccoons because there's a lot of calls on those.
Okay.
So, yeah, we want to help get people that want to do this legally educated on how to do it.
Yeah, so there's room for growth as you get more people that are trained to do this. Okay, gotcha. So you've talked a little bit about how the organization has changed. Are there any other changes that we haven't talked about, like how you've grown since 1989?
Well, I mean, just the number of animals, first of all.
Uh-huh.
The first year we did this, we took in 159 animals and thought we were busy. And then the next year we took in 550, and the year after that, 850, and now we take in over 3,000 animals a year.
Oh my gosh.
So as the word got out, you know, that's a big part of it. More people know who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, more development, more roads, more housing developments, they're causing more issues for wildlife.
Right.
So there's more of a need for what we do. and people know more about us. So we're taking larger numbers of animals. What we've taken in over the years has changed. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, we used to take in pretty much everything. The state never allowed the rehabilitation of coyote or adult deer, but we used to do orphan deer. But then I think it was in 2009, the state decided that they didn't want anybody rehabilitating even orphan deer in Ohio. So those are the animals that the state doesn't allow. And then because of some of their regulations, back probably almost 30 years ago is when we stopped taking in raccoons as well. Mm. But we still try to help people with situations if they come across a raccoon that needs some help. So,
yeah.
You know, even the animals that we don't take in, we want to make sure the public is educated and they're not trying to do something that's going to put themselves at risk.
Yes, I have found that Nature's Nursery is a really good support for me. Like I mentioned before we started that I've called about we had bats in our house. Mm-hmm. And just getting some advice about, all right, what is the best thing to do here? What are best practices mm-hmm. and that kind of thing? So it seems like really good support in that way. So how big is your team? You have a lot of volunteers and how many?
Yeah, we probably have a little over 100 volunteers in total. I think, you know, 80 that are really pretty active. We have, I believe, 4 full-time staff and maybe 10 or 12 part-time staff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we started in 89, and then I think it was in about 11 years into that we had our first paid position. That was me. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it's grown gradually because we just found that as great as volunteers are, and we would not survive without mm-hmm. them, we needed some consistency as well.
Right.
You know, so that's where we started bringing on paid staff. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, what we do is very people heavy as far as the need for a lot of people to do the work that we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And what areas do you work with? I know you're based in White House, right?
Yeah, we've traditionally been in White House. Now we're technically in Waterville.
Okay.
So our first location was on Reed Road in White House, and that was Dave and Deb Cooper's backyard.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. then we moved to Shadle Road in White House, and that was the old workhouse, and it was Metro Parks property. And now we have our own property on Dutch Road in Waterville.
Okay. And how has your personal role changed since you started? I'm sure you had to be, you've always been hands-on, but mm-hmm. how has that changed your day-to-day and what you do?
Well, for a long time, Nature's Nursery was, in fact, you know, I've said that it's not really a job, it's kind of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So even in the beginning when we were all volunteers, I would come in the morning. I had a job, I've had multiple jobs over the years, but I had a job at the time down on in Toledo working at a copier place, and I had to be to work at 8:00 in the morning. Mm-hmm. I would go into Nature's Nursery and do the chores and get the animals fed, and then change my clothes and go on into work. And then when I got off work, I would go back to Nature's Nursery. And fortunately, like I said, my husband was very understanding. He wasn't really so much an animal person as me. And when we were dating, he kind of got wrangled into building cages and helping to design cages. And over the years, you know, it's been an ongoing joke at our house. He would come home one day and I would have a cage with some baby opossums in it, and the next day he'd come home and the opossums were there, and then there was a cage of woodchucks, and then there was a playpen with some crows in it, and and then finally he came home, and along with all of those was a cage of skunks, and he said, you know, this isn't Nature's Nursery right here, right?
So he's like, this is really bleeding
really
into our life.
he's really been a saint over the years. So
yeah.
And then after doing this for over 30 years, I did develop a condition with my lungs from working around the birds for so long, and I ended up having to have a double lung transplant, and I had to stop being at Nature's Nursery.
Oh.
So now my involvement is very different. I'm helping with social media. I do training sessions, sometimes do PR and things like this, mm-hmm. but I can't work with the animals anymore, which was really, really hard to hear.
Oh, that's really tough.
Yeah.
How long ago did that happen?
Well, I started getting sick, having a chronic cough and everything, uh-huh. probably about 15 years ago.
Okay.
And it took them a little while to figure out what the issue was. And I can remember my pulmonologist calling me and saying, good news, we figured out what it is. You've got hypersensitivity pneumonitis. And you just need to give up your pet parrot and quit your job. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's not good news to me.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd had my parrot for 23 years, and obviously Nature's Nursery, like I said, was pretty much who I was. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was probably about 6 years ago, maybe a little bit longer. And so it took me about, no, it was probably about 8 years ago, because it took me about 5 years to find the right people to help take over Nature's Nursery and make sure that it could continue on, and then also to find a proper home for my parrot. But yeah, by that point, it had gotten too advanced, and that's when I ended up having to go on oxygen and all of that.
Oh,
so.
My goodness. Yeah. Since then, what's a typical day in your life? Like, you said Nature's Nursery is pretty much your life.
Yeah.
So from the time you wake up to, it sounds like the time, I'm like, I don't really know when you sleep based on what you said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now my, like I said, since my involvement isn't as much, my involvement is a bit more sporadic. But to walk into Nature's Nursery in the morning as a volunteer or an employee, when you walk in the morning, the first thing you're doing is going through checking on all of the animals, and that can be a lot of animals. We can have, you know, a couple hundred animals on site, and not to mention, you know, we've got all of our education animals. Mm-hmm. So checking on everybody, more people are starting to arrive. We're checking messages from overnight. There have been times when, during the busy season especially, where we could get, you know, 20 or more phone calls in an hour after hours, and have all of those to return we need to.
Yeah.
Luckily, now, kind of like everybody else, we're using AI to help us with that. So we've got AI that's at least touching bases with people and letting them know that as soon as a staff person is available, someone will be getting in contact with them. Because it can be very upsetting for people when they find something, especially after hours when they can't get a hold of any help.
Right.
You know, we get phone calls, people who have found a fox hit by car at 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
Now, I do sometimes check messages as late as that because I tend to stay up kind of late.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they have something to touch base with until they can get a hold of us.
Yes.
And then as people are arriving, there's food prep being done. If you could see our food prep station, it is, that's a whole entity of itself.
Yeah.
Trying to get food for all the different types of animals that we deal with. We're going through, during the busy season especially, we'll go through cases of greens just to feed the baby bunnies, the woodchucks, the turtles, everything that we've got. You know, people don't realize a little baby bunny will eat, you know, 5 to 8 times its size in greens every day along with other things.
Yeah, they're eating constantly, right?
We go through... not to be indelicate, but lots of mice and rats.
Uh-huh.
You know, we've got raptors that are eating those, and opossums and fox and all of those types of animals. So all that food prep is being done. And while that's going on, the clinic staff is going through anybody that's in the clinic that's needing medical care, getting them in their morning meds. And other volunteers during the busy season are getting started in the NICU, starting to feed baby animals, because that goes on all day long because many of them need multiple feedings a day. Baby bunnies are being tube fed. Mm-hmm. Opossums are being tube fed. And then there's, you know, the bats that we're taking care of that all need to be fed every day. So that, and then we've got the separate staff and volunteers that are all working with the education animals so that we can keep all of that separate, so that we're not risking making any of our education animals sick from anything that the wild rehab animals might have.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And for the baby animals that have to be fed, like, so frequently, what do you do for night feedings?
We have foster volunteers that take them home. We require our foster volunteers to be with us for at least a year before we allow them to take any animals off site, because we're responsible for whatever they do with these animals. Like I said, we are, you know, licensed by, you know, U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. So these people are trained then to take those animals home and feed them overnight, and then they bring them back in for weigh-ins and checks and all of that. And then once those babies are starting to eat on their own, they come back to Nature's Nursery, and then they spend some more time in the building before getting moved outside and learning how to be the wild animals they're supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a commitment by those fosters.
Oh, yeah. And the people that do it, it's a huge, I don't know, love and commitment for them. And they all have to have spouses that put up with it as well.
So does your husband now consider himself an animal lover? You said he wasn't exactly at first. He would have to.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He developed a huge appreciation. I think he was probably a normal animal lover, just not quite on my level of an animal lover.
What would you say is the most difficult part of your job, either now or even in the beginning, just difficult parts of the job?
Obviously, you know, a lot of animals don't make it. A lot of what we're doing, you know, unfortunately, is humanely euthanizing animals that can't go back out into the wild. And we have to use a different criteria than if we were working at a vet clinic. I've worked at a vet clinic. And, you know, if a cat or a dog needs to have their leg amputated, they've got a home, you know, somebody to take care of them. We have to consider, you know, can that animal survive back out in the wild? And would it be humane to have them do that, you know, try to attempt that? So, you know, there's that, you know, and then explaining that to the people that find them. Because, you know, we've had people bring in animals, you know, a case one time of a mourning dove and its wing was off. And they wanted to know why we couldn't save it. And so we've gotten very good over the years, I think, at trying to explain to people the, you know, the importance of these animals having quality of life. That quality of life is more important than quantity of life. And that any animal that can have an opportunity, that's our goal. But a lot of times we are having to end a life, to end some suffering. And then I think sometimes dealing with people is, it can be the harder part of the job.
Yeah, that sounds kind of emotionally taxing. I mean, you're having to give bad news. And I would imagine some people give you the kind of pushback like, well, I can keep it. And how do you handle that? Because I'm sure that happens.
Well, I think one thing that we changed over the years is almost everybody that calls Nature's Nursery now, if they are calling about an injured animal, it's almost just part of our, you know, dialogue with them to say, just so you know, our goal is to get them better and back out into the wild. If that can't happen, this animal will be humanely euthanized. So people know that in advance, and they have time to kind of come to grips with it. When we were first doing this, we didn't think to do that. And they would bring an animal in. We would take it back into the clinic. We'd be finishing up the paperwork. And they'd say, you know, can I release it back when it's ready to go? And the person from the clinic would come back and say, this animal is in bad shape. And and then people would be upset. But now I think it's very rare. You know, every once in a while we'll get somebody on the phone that says they don't want to bring something to us if that's a possibility. But not nearly like what we used to see. I think people are really starting to understand all about quality of life.
And I'm sure as you've worked with the public, just finding, you know, best practices for dealing with that. Because, that's really emotional. What are some success stories that stand out to you?
Well, my personal favorite, we had a sandhill crane come in. You know, they're big like a gray blue heron. But it was a just a youngster, not a little tiny baby, but a youngster that had been caught by a dog and had was not using its legs at all. So it had some type of spinal trauma. And when I started taking care of this animal, I had no confidence this animal was even going to be able to be placed somewhere for education if it couldn't be released. But we started trying, and we worked with this animal, and we did crazy things. I mean, one time I went out to the dollar store, and I bought a hamper that looked like a frog. It was a child's clothing hamper, and I got holes in the bottom. And I put the bird in that, and I would walk him around, making him use his legs. We were also, of course, while we were doing this, he was getting anti-inflammatories and pain medications and all of that, and we were having to hand feed it. Amazingly, with that bird, exactly 6 weeks from when it came in, we were keeping in touch with the people that found it, and they said the adults were still around in their property, and this was out in way out in Pioneer, Ohio. And we were able to take that bird back and get it reunited with its parents. And so that was...
And best case scenario,
Absolutely.
That's the best
it was not
for.
Anything that I ever imagined. And so that's the thing that, you know, is really important for us is we don't give up until we know we need to give up. Even when things come in, and I explain to people a lot. In fact, we just did a post the other day. Sometimes the things that come in looking the absolute worst are the ones that we release a few weeks down the road. And sometimes the animals that come in and they look perfectly fine. They just weren't flying or they just weren't trying to get away, die overnight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, you know, we don't get to have a any kind of background or history on these animals, like when you take an animal into the vet clinic.
That's right.
And so we're guessing at what might have happened and what might be wrong. And then we start running tests to try to help us figure it out. But, you know, a lot of times we're having to do a lot of guesswork.
Mm-hmm. What's the most common call that you get from people in the area that are seeking help on behalf of an animal?
Baby bunnies.
Okay. I
think in my sleep I say, put the bunny back, put the bunny back. Because people call and they find a nest of baby bunnies in their yard and they're like, there's no mother. And we say, mother rabbits do not stay with their babies.
They have things to do, right?
Yeah, they've got things to do, and they know they're going to attract a predator if they're staying there.
Uh-huh.
So two or three times a day in a 24-hour period, they will be there for 5 or 10 minutes. Nurse, bunnies do something called gut loading. They just take in a lot of formula. Their bellies get really huge, and then mom's not back again for hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps to keep them safe. The other thing they do that really confuses people is they will make their nest right in the middle of their yard. And that's because predators tend to go around the perimeters. They don't go through the centers of the yards as much as they do. So there's a lot of reasons behind what seems like a really dumb decision for a rabbit to make.
And also tough for lawn care.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, we're always educating people on, you know, and there'll always be that person that doesn't want to do quite anything that you've said. So they say, I've got a dog in my yard. The dog is going to get the bunnies in. Okay, here's the things you can do to keep your dog away from the bunnies. And we'll say you can put a laundry basket over it with a brick on top while the dog's out. When the dog goes back in, take that off. Mom's not going to want to come there when the dog is out anyway.
Right.
We've had people put wire dog crates over the nest and just leave the door open when the dog is inside and close the door when the dog. So there's all kinds of things that we can help them to figure out to keep those babies with their mother. We are a poor substitute for the real thing. Mm-hmm. We do our absolute best, but you know, mom rabbit can tell them that if a shadow is going overhead, that's a hawk and they need to run. We can't tell them that. So there's a lot of things they miss out being raised by us. Plus, we take in hundreds and hundreds of baby bunnies throughout the busy season. We can't afford to be taking in ones that don't need to come in.
Right.
So it can be a little inconvenient for people if they have to mess with their dogs and that kind of thing, or, you know, cover the nest when it's time to mow. But we can talk them through all of that. And overall, most people are just super appreciative of trying to figure it out.
Right. Just having the guidance.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, when we answer the phone, they sound kind of, sometimes somebody might sound kind of aggressive, you know, like, I have baby bunnies in my yard, you need to come get them, you know, and it's like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And so, you know, after talking, you know, as long as we take the time with them, they usually will understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What are some misconceptions about what your organization does? That kind of builds on the former question.
I think it goes in a couple of different directions. Unfortunately, if somebody has had a, you know, experience with us where an animal didn't make it, sometimes they think that's all we do is kill animals, you know. But more often, people think that we are bunny huggers, that we, you know, want to save everything out there. And we're trying to tell people, you know, if there's a hawk getting into the bunny nest in your yard, as hard as that is to see, that's part of nature. We don't want to interfere with that. We're here to balance the scales on the negative effects that humans have, because that's 95% of what we see is animals getting injured, getting sick, becoming orphans because of things that people do, most of it unintentional.
Yeah, and well-meaning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, we try to make sure that they understand that these animals, there's an in-between. We don't want them to make pets out of them, and we don't want to hate them either. So we'll get people calling, and we might have one person who has baby skunks in their yard, and they'll call us and say, what vet can I take these to get them descented so I can keep them as pets? And then the others are like, I don't want them in my yard at all. Can you come and get them and take them away?
Yeah.
So we're trying to get people to find that middle of the road and realize that wildlife has its place out there, and it can be in your yard and not be a problem for you.
Mm-hmm. Can you descent a skunk?
You can descent
learning
a skunk.
So much.
You can't do it legally with no skunk. No vet would do it legally unless you had a permit for it. And okay. The ridiculous part in Ohio is you can buy just about any kind of wild animal from somebody who is permitted to breed them and sell them, but you can't take one out of the wild and make it a pet.
Okay.
So we obviously highly discourage people mm-hmm. from having any wild animals as pets. It's not fair to the animal. Our fox, Lenny, that we had for 12 years just recently passed away, but he mm-hmm. came to us. He was very obviously not a wild fox. His markings were a little off. You could tell he was from a breeding situation. Mm-hmm. And he was found at Sidecut Park. He would approach people and roll over on his back like he wanted his
like
belly rubbed. And then he would run away. And he was totally emaciated because he had no idea what to do in the wild. And most people that get wild animals as pets at some point just let them go.
Mm-hmm. They just think they're going
to
be fine.
And they don't check to see if there is a vet that will take care of them when they need help. Most vets don't deal with wildlife, even if it is, quote, legal wildlife. So, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you come across a good many situations of that kind?
And we, we've had a lot of animals over the years where we have suspected that. We've had a lot of people call us and say, I can remember somebody calling us and saying, I just got a pet fawn and it's getting bloated and what should I do? I said, take it to your vet. And they said, well, we don't have a vet for it. And I'm like, take it back to the breeder. He won't take it back.
Okay. Those
kind of
things. Yeah.
So, yeah. And, people, and that's where it's really important for us to try and get the right message across, especially on social media. In fact, we were just sitting in on a Zoom training session today on social media and talking about how we might think it's no big deal to, show an animal, and not have our gloves on, that type of thing. But it's really important for organizations like ours to give the right message and not make these animals look like they could be a cute pet.
Mm-hmm.
They're cute, obviously. But, we have to make sure that the message that we're getting out there and that other rehabs are getting out there is one that is educating the public about appreciating wildlife where it's at and not trying to make pets out of it.
Mm-hmm. So if people want to learn more about Nature's Nursery, whether it's to volunteer or just need help mm-hmm. with animals, how can they follow you and find you?
Well, we are on Facebook and Instagram. I believe we're on TikTok too. Our website is natures-nursery.org. Mm-hmm. And so they can go there if they're interested in volunteering. There's a whole section and it changes all the time as to which volunteer positions that we're hiring for. And that's where they can also, learn about, our organization, find out what kind of events we might be having going on, and just learn about different animals that we have coming in.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back to talk with Rebecca Trumbull, a local pet photographer. Back to Toledo Works, the Toledo Free Press show about the working lives of Toledoans. In this episode, we're continuing to talk about working with animals in our city. So we have Rebecca Trumbull, a local photographer who spends her days capturing the lives of pets. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're here. So when I was first introduced to your work a few years ago, you were doing a lot of wedding photography. So can you tell me how you got your start as a photographer and how long you've been in the trade?
Sure. I went to college with the idea that I wanted to get into film production. I studied film and television and general communications. I enjoyed all of it. Mm-hmm. Senior year, I took a still photography class, and I just kind of fell in love with the restriction of telling a story in a single frame.
Yeah.
And so kind of had that like planted in my head. I moved back to Toledo. My school was in New York. It's very expensive. I didn't have a job lined up.
Yeah.
So I had a few people approach me about taking some pictures, and it just kind of went from there that I loved doing it. I was good at it. Mm-hmm. And what does it mean to be a business? And lots of research on that.
Yeah.
Our business celebrated 10 years last September.
Oh, wow. And thinking back on those first jobs that you did, what were they like? And when did you realize early on, like, this is really for me?
I would say in the beginning, it was a lot of families, mm-hmm. You know, very casual kinds of things, learning to work with kids and learning to communicate with clients, that kind of thing. So I would say I did about a year of portfolio building and research before I decided to officially become a legal entity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You mentioned that starting your own business is like, what does that mean? Like, you know, how do I go about that? What was that process like for you?
I would say that mentorship was a big thing. I have always put myself in a place to be surrounded with people that know things about stuff I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. Social media has been a huge giver in that area.
Yeah.
I had one specific friend that started his business several years earlier, and I had a very real conversation with him about what that was going to look mm-hmm. like, and that being a small business owner is not necessarily the most consistent situation mm-hmm. for income and work, but that if I really loved it and was okay with the hard parts, I figured I should move forward.
Yeah. So he was like, would recommend, but here's the reality. Yeah. Gotcha. And when did you realize that you wanted to pivot to focusing on pet photography?
I would say it started with adopting my first dog as an adult with my husband. She was a rescue. We got in way over our heads with a little bit of neglect and abuse in her past. Mm-hmm. But we decided that we were going to do our best and make it work. And it just kind of inspired me to learn more about dog personalities, dog training, the effects of trauma and abuse psychologically on them. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the catalyst. I would say that after that, I had a foster from a local rescue group, mm-hmm. Planned Pethood, that approached me through email and asked if I would be interested in photographing some of their adoptable foster dogs. Mm-hmm. That started a long-term relationship with their organization where I was photographing multiple dogs a month for them. And I think through doing that with rescue dogs typically don't have a lot of stability when they first arrive.
Yeah.
You don't know what their personality's like. They might not know any basic commands. They mm-hmm. might not be potty trained. I think it gave me some insight into my ability in working with dogs specifically, animals in general, but it definitely showed that I had a different level of patience and natural mm-hmm. ability in that area.
Yeah, and you had done your research already on like just how to work with different behavioral issues before you even started that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of the knowledge has grown throughout the entire process. Mm-hmm. In Toledo, there is not a huge selection of pet photographers. So that was something a little more practical that mm-hmm. played yeah. into the pivot into the pet photographer realm, was that it was something I was good at, but also something that there was a need for.
Yeah. You really found your niche, mm-hmm. right? And you and your sister, Jessica, run the business together out of Sylvania, right?
Yes, sister-in-law.
Sister-in-law,
yep,
gotcha.
I married her brother.
Okay.
We have had a studio space for 6 years. We're located right near Central and Reynolds, mm-hmm. kind of near Wildwood.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's nice to have a space that we've been able to make pet friendly.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. And what does your partnership with her look like in action? Do you tag team running the business and doing shoots in particular? Or do you ever do them alone? What is that like?
Jessica has been with me in the business from the beginning. She was in high school and tagged along to carry bags and help get little kids' attention. Mm-hmm. She had other plans for her career, but COVID kind of changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
So I ended up asking her to be a bigger part of the business. And so she began learning from me and learning herself through experience. And now we are a partnership. Mm-hmm. So we collaborate, we challenge each other, we hold each other accountable, we butt heads, we have creative differences,
yeah.
but at the end of the day, we work through it. And I'm still learning how to be a partner. I've been independent for a long time, mm-hmm. and it's definitely something that I need to practice and be good at letting go. Mm-hmm. But she's the one person that I could see myself doing that with. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we got here.
Yeah, that's great.
As far as like actual photo shoots, typically with pets, one of us will be photographing and mm-hmm. one of us will be posing the animal or directing the animal, kind of desensitizing them to the situation.
Right.
So you might think that the photographer has the hard job. Both jobs are very hard.
Yeah, that sounds tough to me.
So the fact that we both have the experience, Jessica is also very naturally gifted with animals. Mm-hmm. She has also learned a lot through having her own dog with some of its own issues. So we can kind of alternate who does what, and we can assist each other depending on what the situation is. Mm-hmm. For headshots, for photographing a family that's mostly grown-ups, sometimes we work alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And certain specialties sometimes will default. Jessica is more knowledgeable in agriculture, so mm-hmm. people that have horses and goats, I will put her in charge of those situations.
Yeah.
All the time. So.
Yeah. And I know that early on, you were mainly working with dogs and then kind of expanded from there. Is that right?
Yes. So dogs is probably the most popular pet that people think to have included in their photos.
Yeah.
You think more often you take your dog with you on vacation. You might take your dog with you to eat on the patio somewhere. Mm-hmm. So other pets sometimes don't come to mind as quickly.
Mm-hmm. Like turtles, I saw on your website.
Yes, yes. We've done a tortoise. But there are a lot of animals whose lifespans outlive dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have done a lot of work to kind of have experience with all different types of species.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how far reaching is your business? Do you travel just throughout Northwest Ohio? What's the area?
As kind of a funny answer, Arizona.
Okay.
We have a client that has come back to Ohio a couple of times for branding photos.
Mm-hmm.
Not animal related, but it's kind of nice to say.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I would say a little ways into Michigan and down through Bowling Green. Occasionally we'll have interest from Columbus, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So I'm a cat owner and my cat's name is Oliver Bad Bad. So that tells you a lot about him. He can be sweet, but he's moody.
Lots of nicknames, yep.
Yeah, I'm wondering about tough subjects like that. First of all, cats are a lot tougher to take out of the home than dogs are typically. So how do you deal with working with cats?
I always say with cats, we really just can't plan anything.
Yeah.
Some cats will do great. We had a client bring in two cats to photograph to the studio. It was for his wife's birthday to surprise her. The one cat we got to sit on a backdrop and have the perfect lighting, and the other one hid in a corner the whole time.
Yeah, right.
But we actually did get photos of the cat in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
We just had to pivot and do what we could with what we had while still allowing the cat to be semi-comfortable.
Yeah.
So a lot of times it's, we're willing to go to your home,
mm-hmm.
we're willing to be patient, follow them around, whatever it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
We understand there's a lot we can't control in those situations.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine that it takes a lot of patience. Walk me through a day in your life as a pet photographer and what it takes to run the business, kind of from the time you wake up throughout your day. What is it like?
I really struggle with this because every single day is very different.
Mm-hmm.
I would say a lot of the beginning of the day is just normal business stuff, following up on messages, thinking about marketing,
mm-hmm.
maybe taxes, you know,
yeah.
kind of the things that any business owner can relate to. As far as like working with pets specifically on a day, there's prep that we do at our studio space if they're coming to us. We have some sanitation protocols
mm-hmm.
that we follow. Another thing is like rechecking what we've communicated with the owners to make sure that we remember which dog, what they've let us know
mm-hmm.
about their personality, their fears, their preferences, if they have allergies, if there's something that makes them uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
We try to have a little chat before the session happens, Jessica and I, to make sure that we're kind of on the same page
yeah.
about where we're going with that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say if we don't go home with dog hair, well, hair in general, any animal hair, drool, it hasn't been a good day.
With the exceptions of maybe the reptiles, which I know that you guys have
done. Scales, I don't know.
Yeah, right. I don't know what that would be like. Not as much of a reptile person. but so, yeah, you mentioned a tortoise. I saw on the website someone had a snake. And then there's also a, I think, was it a bearded dragon that I saw?
Yes.
Yeah. And do those have their particular challenges, or are they easier in some ways?
Every animal has a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And every personality is different. I'd say with dogs, that's the most variety, is just that you don't know.
Yeah, such different personalities.
And things like that.
Uh-huh.
I'd say we've photographed goats, and their challenge is they try to eat our bags and our clothes. And we photograph horses, and we really have to pay attention to pieces of equipment or lighting that might make them uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
because they're very easily spooked.
Right.
Birds never sit still.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that is waiting for the moment when they are there and being ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah, one photo that really stood out to me, I think it was the tortoise. It looked like someone had thrown it a blueberry and it caught it in its mouth. I was like, I didn't even know that they did that. That was such a good shot.
Yes, they all have their own personalities, and it's really cool to see.
Yeah, that's really neat. So along with your commercial work, I know you've done some collaborating with Ruby Cats in downtown Toledo. So can you tell me about your coverage of what they do and why that was important to you?
Absolutely. I think that in the rescue world, we do a lot of dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the thing that we are more experienced with and more drawn to. I personally can't have cats because of allergies mm-hmm. in my home. I enjoy them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think having a new cat cafe was really exciting, and we were looking to feature a local nonprofit organization on our blog. So being able to give something in the cat world, which has just as much of a problem,
mm-hmm.
if not more, than homeless dogs,
yeah,
feral cats, and just cats needing homes, needing to be spayed and neutered. It's a huge issue. Mm-hmm. I wish there was more of me to support and give to everything. So this was a nice opportunity to do that in a different area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I saw some of those photos on the website. Those are really neat photos of those cats. So for people who are considering doing a photo shoot, how should they prep for it or how should they contact you? Is that all of that information on your website?
Yes. Yeah, so reaching out is the first step. I guess being brave enough to reach out is the first step. A lot of people want great photos of their animal companions, but what we hear most is my dog would never do that.
Okay. So people are hesitant.
And what I want to say is your pet does not have to know how to sit.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They don't have to know how to be calm and composed. Obviously, safety concerns we would like to know about, mm-hmm. but in general, some anxiety, some shyness, we've been able to work through so many things, mm-hmm. and having experience with rescues help a lot. I always say, if you don't stress, we don't stress. Mm-hmm. So if your dog is bouncing off the walls, like, it's totally normal.
Right, right.
We're not judging you. We are just gonna wear them out until they have a little bit of their brain to focus and sit for maybe a half a second.
So is that part of the process? Like, you might need to play with them so that they can get their energy out before getting started?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
With some dogs, we have repeats and we just know, like, this dog is gonna make us work for it. And we better just get the toys out ahead of time. Other dogs, it's that they really need the time to warm up. Mm-hmm. And that might start with their owner holding them for a while. And then maybe they get down and they get to sniff around a little. But maybe if we move too quick, they get shot and they hide again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So treats help. There's a lot of things that we understand that we can accommodate.
Yeah. Yeah. And aside from the gift of giving people captured memories with their pets, what do you hope people get most out of your work? Like, if it were in a gallery on display, your work with pets, what would you want people to get out of that?
I would say that every life is worth documenting. Mm. This is a slogan that was kind of a few years ago we kind of put out there. Every life has value and deserves to be treated with respect and care. Mm-hmm. And photographs are a way of preserving, you know, the memory of those lives. And animals are a huge part of our day-to-day lives and our family. Mm-hmm. They impact us in ways that can be even more significant than certain family members. They enrich our experience. I know personally mine help with my mental health.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
So really valuing that every creature has its own psychology and personality, and they're impacted differently by trauma, mm-hmm. and survival instincts, and just being willing to understand their story and where they come from and have the tools to make them feel safe and help them heal. We're all worth that.
Yeah. Well said. And where can people find your work? On social media and your website? Tell us more about that.
Yes. Yeah, so we're most active on Facebook and Instagram. Look for Trumbull Photography. And our website is trumbullphoto.com.
All right. Well, thank you for being on Toledo Works.
Thank you.
That's all we have for today on this episode of Toledo Works, which is a part of WGTE's The Local Thread and created in partnership with the Toledo Free Press. You can find this episode online at wgte.org/ToledoWorks, where new episodes are posted Friday morning before they air on FM 91 at 7 p.m. I'm Erin Holden. Have a great weekend.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.
The views and opinions expressed in The Local Thread are those of the hosts of the program and its guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WGTE Public Media.